Blog Talk Radio.
Definitely not. You see, over here, we walk by sight to see what makes your whole day glow, because faith is believing what you know ain't so. And if you're on the PC there, you could turn your speakers down and dial 310-982-4273 to get through. And, yeah, remember, turn those speakers down. We don't need all that feedback.
Exactly. And guys, you know, everybody, guys and ladies and gentlemen, hey, we thank you because, again, we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And there are some events coming up. Actually, I want everyone to mark their calendars for the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers. And this is taking place Sunday, February the 24th of this year, which is the last Sunday in February. And what for this particular program, again, we would like to invite you all to join us as we celebrate our humanism. And for those of you who organized events last year, please forward your plans for this year to aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. Again, aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. And also for those who prefer a smaller, more intimate gathering, you can organize something as well. You don't have to be an organization. You don't have to participate with a large organization if you choose not to do so. It can just be you and another like-minded friend or associate or relative. You can sit down and have some coffee and, you know, talk about your humanisms. You can give your leftimonials, if you will, and, you know, talk about how you left religion, or if you never were, you know, in religion, if you were brought up, you know, in a secular home, you know, you can talk about that as well, you know, and we just encourage you all to do so. And for some people that would rather make it a family event, you know, you want to stay at home, like I said, you can break out the old Ataris, break out those old ColecoVision, Nintendo, sit down and show these kids what video games used to be like, you know, or you could sit down and play with them, or you could just sit down and allow the kids to read to you, or you can read that, you know, read to your kids. And the email address is aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com. And for those of you who would like to call in, you can leave a voicemail for this as well. The voicemail for this particular program is 213-373-3938. Again, 213-373-3938. If you have any questions, leave a voicemail. We'll get back with you. If you all have any questions, again, you can email us. You can go to the site, which is aadayofsolidarity.blogspot.com. Again, aadayofsolidarity.blogspot.com. This is an event that was started by Mr. Donald Wright, and wonderful man. We're going to have him back on the show. We're going to get him on the show the Sunday before the Day of Solidarity, just to encourage you guys to get together and to do something. And again, we like pictures, you know, we like stories, we like videos. Again, if you want to send in your leftimonials, please do that, and we'll post them. Again, we want to post all of this information as an encouragement to other non-believers. You know, we're actually trying to gather the information from last year so we can post the videos from last year so you can see what happened last year and then what we're going to put together this year. I know black non-believers down in Atlanta there, they already have their venue set. They're trying to gather the information about the speakers. I believe black non-believers of Metro Atlanta, they've set up their meetup for that particular day, and they're going to get the details, you know, to us as well. So as we get the information in, we will update it. And again, if you're in Timbuktu, Iowa, and there's only two of you down there, get together and have a cup of coffee. You know, you can go to one another's homes, you can go to Starbucks or wherever. You know, do something that day. And then also, I just want to make sure everybody knows, this is open to all believers. You don't have to be a minority. This is for everyone. We had people of all different ethnicity and races participating last year. So, again, we encourage you guys, whether it's a small get-together or gathering or a large gathering or get-together, please, you know, and again, send in your stories, your pictures, your videos. Send in your details so that we can put the information out there so that other people who are interested in participating, they'll know where to find you. And actually, we're trying to put together an application for this so that you can get it on your Android and your iOS, but I need the details. So go ahead and please send that in to us so we can build out that application so you'll know where to find it and it'll have the maps and all of that. So again, aadayofsolidarity@gmail.com, and the website is aadayofsolidarity.blogspot.com. And one more time, the telephone number for this particular event is 213-373-3938. You can find all of this information on the Black Freethinkers page profile and also on the profile for the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers on Facebook as well. So I just wanted to make sure that you all know that that is coming up, is happening, and we're really excited about it. And again, it's the last Sunday in February, so that's February 24th. And I am just like, man, I'm so excited about it, you know, so excited about it. So, yeah, participate, everybody. You know, again, even if it's only you, reading a book. You can be reading, you know, Sikibu's book, Moral Combat. You can be reading something by Norm Allen, Anthony Penn, even Donald Wright. He has a book out there as well. Check that out. You know, very good books. Even if you're at home just enjoying your day, with a cup of coffee or a tea or what have you, send us a picture, something. So, again, we thank each and every last one of you all for your support. No, you can't get extra credit for that, Nate. no pictures required for that. But, guys, thank you. You know, this has been the past week or two has been absolutely wonderful. I have truly been strengthened and motivated, just in better, in a better place. And so, you know, for those who have called and emailed and inboxed to encourage me, thank you so much. You just never know how much I appreciate it. And, you know, it's just, It's been interesting. What's been happening? I posted a few stories yesterday. Couldn't sleep. And it's just, it's unreal. It's unreal, some of the things that have been happening. For those of you who are not aware, Creflo Dollar will not be charged. Basically, his daughter didn't want to see him charged, and, you know, the Fayetteville prosecutor dropped the charges against him. He had to attend an anger management course and pay a little fine. But that's pretty much it, you know, as far as that's concerned. And, again, it goes back to this is why people are afraid to come forward when, you know, these atrocities happen in these churches. And it's horrible. Yeah, it is abusive. And, you know, I don't know. I feel for that baby. I really do for that young lady. I can only imagine what she's going through and what she had to deal with. But I wish her nothing but the absolute best. You know, that young lady, I wish her nothing but the best. Anyway, I've posted quite a bit the past few days. One story in particular, Ethiopian women that were attempting to settle in Israel, they were pretty much forced to take the Depo-Provera shots, you know, the birth control shots, the three-month shots. And, you know, at first Israel denied it, but now they're starting to admit that they were, you know, basically giving these women these shots, you know, and for the most part against their will. And it's just horrible. You know, more to come on that. You know, just keep your eyes open for that. In Texas, I think I have to say it's Texas, you know, with their revisionist tactics there. The revisionaries that will be coming on PBS. Oops. And, you know, check that out. It should be interesting. It's talking about, you know, the showdown over the teaching standards, and I've posted some things. I mean, you know, they're trying to teach that black people came from Ham. They're trying to teach that humans were on Earth at the same time as dinosaurs. It's horrible. It's horrible. Just in the fact that people believe this stuff, I guess that's what I can't get over and what I don't understand. I posted 10 interesting lessons from creationist-inspired school books. Now, go out and read that. It's interesting. It will make all of the hairs stand up on your body because people believe this, and it's outrageous. It's a couple that's suing Scientology to get their donations back because they say basically Scientology has turned into a secular organization, you know, just bent on getting money. Well, I mean, that's all of them, so, hey, I don't know what else to tell you. Stop giving them your money, period. And speaking, you know, about giving people money, you know, you have a lot of people out here that are misrepresenting themselves, both on the theist side as well as on the non-believing side. And, you know, I ran across something, and I'm going to try not to go into a rant. For those who know me personally, you know how I kind of get about certain things. And, you know, there are a couple of people on Facebook that are or that have solicited for donations, for money, for, you know, a few, you know, life-impacting events or tragedies that they were experiencing. And for one particular person, I mean, every other month, this person is sending out an event invite stating that everything that could go wrong is going wrong in their lives. And with this economy, things have happened to people, I understand. But for some of these people, I think they found a new scam. You know, appealing to our emotions, if you will, and that's a logical fallacy, you know, guys, look that up. But what they're doing, they're appealing to our emotions. One particular person that was solicited for donations, they were claiming that they needed the money for, you know, living expenses, A, B, C, D, and E. It happens. I understand. I know. I've seen people. I know people. I've helped people. And, you know, with this particular person, you know, I, you know, helped them out a little bit as well. But now they're traveling all over the world. How do you go from homeless to being a world traveler? So at this point, I am rather cynical. And this is why I don't really ask for donations. I mean, we started a donation campaign last year, and I did a couple of shows, and I just kind of let it go because I know how people feel about that. And just seeing what some of these other people do, it makes me sick. So I just may be skeptical for a while because this is what all of this is starting to sound like to me. That's how I'm going to take it from now on, because it's unreal. How do you go from being, you know, claiming to be homeless, and now you're all over North Africa? How does that work? You know, and it's just, it's horrible. It's horrible. You know, let me pull a couple of people in. You know, I see Raina here, and hey, and I think this is Deborah. Is that you?
Yes, yes, yes. How y'all doing?
Good.
Hey.
So, yes, hi, ma'am. And I'm
well,
like,
I was saying maybe the world is their home. You know, they're at home everywhere. They like to spread out. You know, different room every week. Yeah.
I don't know what to say. All I know is from now on, whenever I hear certain people speak, this is what I'm going to hear.
Speaking of Charlie Brown's mom speak, oh my goodness. If you guys haven't seen it, Dr. Fonza has a piece out about her experience in a group talking about, you know, feminism and, you know, how there are feminists who are criticizing Michelle Obama. It is so good, so well written, and she breaks down what, you know, what these people are really about. And so if you get an opportunity, go and look at it, because a lot of what these people are saying sound like womp, 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 just like what Kim was playing. So, I mean, that is if you know what they're really saying. You know?
Right. Right. And the thing is that I'm extremely compassionate and understanding. You know, things happen. I've seen it. Things have happened to people in my family. Things have happened to me. So, you know, I try to be empathetic. I try to put myself in other people's shoes and, you know, try to help them find resources. You know, I go out of my way. But it's like, I mean, seriously? Seriously.
Right.
One day you're saying that you need money to eat and a place to stay, and, you know, all I see every day is that you've been to a shitload of restaurants, you know, in 1 week, and I barely eat out once or twice a week, you know, and I do that because I like to cook my own food. I like to know what's in it, you know, but, you know, you're talking about, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's freaking ridiculous, and what's happening is it's causing me to not want to help people, to not want to, you know, donate to, you know, worthy causes, if you will, unless I know that the money is going to go to the cause that they profess. Otherwise, you know, like I did for the Day of Service, you know, I just went out and bought some groceries. I made some grocery bags, and I picked up some gift cards, and I handed out the bags of groceries, and I handed out the gift cards, and I was done with it because I knew the food and the money went to the people. Now, what they did with it after I gave it to them, that's on them. But when I pack these grocery bags, I pack up enough for them to have enough for them and to be able to share it with another person for a couple of days. You know, so I get the plates and silverware and, you know, napkins and all of that, as well as, you know, other toiletries that I know they probably need. But, you know, again, how do you go from claiming to be homeless to now you're, you know, traveling all over North Africa? Again, you know, next time I hear that and see that, this is what I'm hearing.
Oh, you know what? There's something else. There's something else that reminds me of Ray Lewis talking after defeating the Patriots and the Broncos, actually.
You know, so again, if you get some cynicism, which rarely comes out, you know, I try my best not to be that way, but no, I can't do it, and I can't, you know, co-sign on that bullshit because it's not right. There are people out here who are truly hurting. There are people out here that need help. And, see, that's one of the issues that, you know, I'm looking at in the free thought community across the board. This transcends any racial or, you know, ethnicity. Basically, we need help to implement these programs. But, you know, just like I'm hearing womp, 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 I'm sure other people are hearing womp, womp, womp as well. And, again, you know, there's so many people out here that's on that bullshit. I can understand why people are cynical and why people don't necessarily want to participate. And all I say is be extremely discerning with who you support, whether that's financially or, you know, on an ideological slant. And so it's just it's interesting. But today's show, you know, we're going to transition out of this because I can go on forever about all the bullshit I see on Facebook and Twitter. It's actually very disheartening. It's disappointing. I'm disappointed in quite a few people for a number of reasons.
Yep.
But we're going to talk about unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. You know, again, there are a lot of people who helped to make the civil rights movement what it was. It wasn't just Martin Luther King, and it wasn't just, you know, Bayard Rustin and Asa Philip Randolph, even though, you know, those are great men. You know, it wasn't just Malcolm X. It wasn't just the Black Panther Party. You know, they were all, you know, part of the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement started before, you know, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on the bus. W.E.B. Du Bois is considered the grandfather of the civil rights movement. And it goes back even before then. I mean, actually, this goes all the way back to the, you know, actually the mid-1500s. And I posted a few days ago about a gentleman by the name of John Punch. And basically, John Punch was an indentured servant. He was a slave, and he ran away with two white slaves because, again, there were whites that were slaves as well. They were indigenous people. There were indigenous people that were slaves as well. And basically, you know, want you all to make sure that you know and understand that. Basically, John Punch ran away, and all three of them were recaptured. They were, you know, captured and brought back probably by one of those good old state militias. And basically, either that or, you know, the indigenous people were being paid to return slaves. Again, go back and read your history and understand history. They were returned. The two white guys were sentenced to 4 more years of servitude, but John Punch was required to serve as a slave for the remainder of his life. And it was one of the first cases in which lifetime, you know, slavery was based on race. And ironically, this John Punch gentleman here was, well, is a distant relative of Barack Obama on his mother's side.
Oh, interesting.
And, yeah, quite interesting. And I'm like, You know, so I posted that on my wall for you guys. So just go over there and take a look. You know, I think I'm going to turn the Black Freethinkers profile into a public page. Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do as I figure out how to do it. You know, so that information, all of that is available. And, you know, I want you to go back and take a look at that. And that was in 1640, so I want to make sure I give you all dates for this. And his name was John Punch, P-U-N-C-H. There was another gentleman. His name was John Cather,
C-A-S-O-R. And basically, he became the first legally recognized slave for life in the Virginia colony. It's a whole bunch of interesting things coming out of Virginia. I would tell people, look out for the gerrymandering, you know, not only with the redistricting of, you know, different districts in your cities, but also they're trying to change the electoral college process. So keep an eye out for that. Don't sleep on this, you know, let's not sleep on this until the election comes up and then everybody wants to act blank. We're telling you this now. But that was John Taser, if you want to go and read some information about him. And, you know, long, long, long history as to, you know, what went on, you know, with civil rights. And again, you know, the definition of civil rights, it varies from person to person, but I don't want you to be under the misconception that civil rights and the civil rights movement started with Martin Luther King Jr. It did not. It was going on way before, you know, he was a twinkle in his father's eye. So I definitely want you guys to go out and do some reading. Go out and do some research. I mean, there's so much that you all need to understand, and I'm still learning, too. So I'm learning right with you guys. And when I learn, you know, I'm trying to share this information with you guys. You know, go out and learn about the war on poverty. Go out and also learn a little bit more about the March on Washington. You need to go out and research about the Selma March as well. You know, you have the Rochester riot. You have the Klan murders for Viola Liuzzo. And just so much, so much. Operation Rolling Thunder, you know, reform in Watts, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, you guys can learn so much. Speaking of the March on Washington, it took place August 28th, 1963. And, you know, again, Bayard Rustin was the strategist behind it. Asa Philip Randolph was the organizer behind it. And Asa Philip Randolph was considered the most dangerous black person in America, because he was able to organize over a 250,000 people to march on Washington. That was phenomenal then. And they didn't have the internet. We have the internet. Imagine what we could do, the changes that can be implemented if we were to just put our differences aside. Black, white, Latino, Asian, get together and demand that these people do what's best for all of us, not just for the rich few. And yeah, what are we going to do about our situation now? Exactly. We need to put together a plan of action and start demanding changes.
Yeah.
I don't dispute that. You know, but again, you know, we have to put the petty differences to the side, understand that we're not going to get everything that we want, you know, but if we can get the majority of what we want, you know, that's a step, you know, in the right direction. So, again, the civil rights movement is ongoing. You know, the civil rights movement continues to this day. And I think it's important that, you know, people understand, you know, what's happening. You know, go out and find out what's happening in your neighborhoods. Find out about the needs of the people. Because, again, it's not about per se. It's not about us individually. And while I do believe in individualism, I also believe in collectivism. And we need to work together. We can get a lot more done if we work together. And in September 15, 1963, that's when the Birmingham church was bombed. Remember, those babies killed four little girls, and they were attending Sunday school. And, you know, the gentleman that, you know, one of the gentlemen that perpetrated that crime You know, he was convicted in 2001, 38 years after the murder. It took 38 years to get justice for that. I was talking about Selma, you know, Freedom Day in Selma. You know, that took place October 7th, 1963. You know, and the sheriff, Jim Clark, and deputies used force to prevent, you know, black voters or would-be black voters from entering the courthouse to register. Know your history. Know your history is extremely important for
don't
you all.
Don't forget the black Bible and the white Bible.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I said, don't forget the black Bible and the white Bible. They had to use separate Bibles, you know, when you go to court and you got to put your hand on the Bible.
Yeah,
black Bible,
you know,
and a white Bible.
But yeah, no, yeah, you know, they had a lot of that. And, you know, it's just so much. It's so much. You know, we only have so much time. And, you know, I think we're going to make this a series and talk about this a little bit more in depth. But, you know, it's just it's important for us to understand and to know what has happened in the past. You know who some of these people are. Most people know who Martin Luther King Jr. is, and his role in the civil rights movement. But do you know who Bob Moses is? You know, Bob Moses, you know, he was a Harlem-born member of the SNCC, and he spent 4 years working on voter registration in Mississippi, you know, regarding the civil rights movement. You know, he played a pivotal role in helping people to register to vote. You know, he played a pivotal role in the 1964 Freedom Summer campaign. And, you know, dozens of black and white volunteers traveled to the South to help blacks demand their right to vote. We cannot forget these people. We cannot forget them. You know, I think it's important that we understand and we know who these people are. You know, you have James Chaney. You know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Mr. Chaney here, you know, James Chaney, you know, was an African-American volunteer in the Freedom Summer voter registration drive. And he and two white volunteers, Andrew Goodman and Michael Schwerner, they were murdered in Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know, they lost their lives, you know, and, you know, they just disappeared. And it took a couple of months for their bodies to be discovered. And it's just, you know, we need to understand. Edgar Ray Killen was convicted, you know, of these crimes, but it was 41 years after the crimes had been committed. So he had a chance to live his life, and, you know, he ended up going to jail when he was an old man. And while some people may think that's cruel, you know, these people lost their lives, their youth. They lost their futures. I mean, it's horrible. You know, another person that I'm sure you all have heard of, Fannie Lou Hamer. Mm. You know, yeah, you know, some people have heard of, you know, but guys, get out there and find out about who these people are. She was a sharecropper. And she became a key delegate for the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And you need to understand, you know, she was one of five delegates who would travel to Atlantic City to unseat the Dixiecrats at the Democratic National Convention. Mm-hmm. You know, get to know who these people are. And I spoke earlier about Viola Liuzzo. Sorry about that. And basically, Viola was a white civil rights activist from Detroit, Michigan, a wife and mother of five. And she was murdered by the Klan after the 1965 Voting Rights March in Selma, Alabama. You know, and so, you know, this happened on the 25th of March, 1965. And they killed her as she was driving marchers from Montgomery to Selma, Alabama. It's just, it's important. It's important that we know this and we know what's happening and we know what has happened, because a lot of this stuff, it seems like it's being revisited. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were four freshmen from North Carolina A&T College, Joseph McNeil, Franklin McCain, Evel Blair Jr., and David Richmond. Those four young men, they sat, you know, at this restaurant, and they ordered a cup of coffee, and they sat there all 4 days until the store closed, and they never got their coffee. And they were challenging the status quo because they couldn't go to certain restaurants and sit down and get a hamburger or, you know, or something to eat, which is why, you know, you had some black-owned restaurants, you know, like, you know, Sylvia's and, you know, Isola's and, you know, all of these different restaurants all over the country. Even though they were barely making a profit, they would put together food to feed these people so that they could eat. Because they couldn't eat at the restaurants. There's only so many greasy bags of fried chicken you can bring from home that's going to last, you know. Because that was one of the ways they were able to eat. You know, they would cook food before they left home and take it with them. And, you know, some people didn't even have that, so they were sharing that. But, you know, some of these black-owned restaurants, they were putting together food and, you know, taking it to them and allowing them to come there to eat for nothing. And, you know, with these four young men, this helped spark other sit-in protests because that was a protest. You know, what's happening with the young people now? What's happening with us? You know, those of us that have been around, you know, I am in my early 40s. And, you know, what happened to that protest spirit? Again, we need to get together. We need to work together. We need to demand change. We need to demand change. And not just in the African-American community. We need to work with, you know, the Latino community and the Asian community and the white community. You know, and because there are a lot of people from other ethnicities and races that were in solidarity with us to progress civil rights. And our civil rights movement inspired, you know, people all over the world. Look at what happened in South Africa with Nelson Mandela, you know, when he was freed. And so, you know, they stated that they were encouraged by the civil rights movement of, you know, African Americans in this country. But again, with that theory, it helped spark other sit-in protests. And, you know, it spread throughout the South, you know, and, you know, it helped energize the civil rights movement. And, you know, look up Woolworth, Woolworth. They were a chain of stores, kind of like a big box store of that day. And they had lunch counters, and they refused to serve blacks, you know, there as well. Have to give credit to Pascal's restaurant in Atlanta, you know, one of the oldest black-owned restaurants and hotels, or it is actually the oldest one in this country. And I must say, from personal experience, their food is phenomenal. They have a great Sunday brunch. But, you know, they were one of the very few white tablecloth restaurants, you know, where black people could be seated, but it was a black-owned restaurant. And so, you know, it's interesting. You know, this is how they would strategize. This is how they would get together. This is how they would talk and discuss, you know, plans for the future as to how the movement should go and what they should do next. And it's important that you all understand, you know, how that came about. It's just a lot. It's a lot that, you know, you guys need to go back and just, you know, study up. One of the pictures, if you go up and you'll see the flashing pictures for the show today, it shows that, you know, they had signs stating that they only catered to white people. And on certain days, only blacks could go to a certain establishment like the zoo and all of that. It was just horrible.
I can remember a restaurant we had down here. It was a burger place, Whataburger, that was the name of it. Mm-hmm. And you could only order from the window. And they had this big sign up there, whites only. I remember those.
It's horrible. It's horrible, you know, and, you know, we need to do sit-ins. We need to do protests. We need to bring it back. And, yeah, there are people today, you know, living, you know, Terry's right. There are people living today that live that. You know, I know my mom and my grandmother who's still, you know, with us. And, you know, my aunts and, you know, other people, you know, our, some of our parents and grandparents, they live this. You know, and that's why I say, you know, don't discount them. You know, if anything, I encourage you guys to go and sit down and talk with them. Maybe for some of you, that can be your own personal day of solidarity. Go spend some time with someone older that may have experienced this and let them tell their story. You know, go visit a senior home, you know, and talk to some of these people that live that and, you know, that may or may not have visitors. Get out there, help somebody. It's not real complicated, and it's not going to take a lot of money. It doesn't take anything. You know, go and talk to these people. Write it down. Let them tell their history. That will make a good documentary for you, you know, young people out there that want to do a documentary. Go and talk to some of these people. Put it on film. Let them tell their stories. And there are documentaries like that out there. It's just interesting. And a lot of things happened. Diane Nash, she was a Nashville student movement leader. And basically, you know, just a few days after the Greensboro sit-in, the students from the American Baptist Theological Seminary, Fisk University, Meharry Medical College, Tennessee A&I, began confronting segregation in Nashville, Tennessee. And basically, they would sit at white-only lunch counters and restaurants, and they were met with violence, brutality, and arrest. And hundreds, you know, were jailed, and thousands marched in protests that continued for years. So, you know, again, that's another name for you guys, Diane Nash. You know, again, don't forget about these people. Do not forget about these people. A lot of people gave their lives. A lot of people lost, you know, their businesses are suffered greatly. There were workshops. And, you know, I know I'm going to do a show this year, hopefully within the next couple of months. I'm going to do a show on nonviolent tactics. You know, I've been reading this great book and had some, you know, wonderful information. And, you know, I definitely want to share some of that with you guys because, again, we need to, you know, we got to re-educate ourselves and understand what happened and what to do in certain situations. I will put it out there, you know, put it out there for you guys to know and see what's, you know, what happened. It's just, like I said, you know, you had students, you know, high school students, college students that basically, you know, they were losing their lives and being jailed and, you know, trumped up charges in some cases. You know, Jean Winona Fleming, you know, another young lady that was from Fisk University, you know, she was jailed because she protested. You know, James Bevel and John Lewis, Congressman, you know, John Lewis, they went to a Nashville restaurant. And the restaurant trapped them inside, locked them inside the restaurant. And then they filled the restaurant with insecticide gas.
And
they turned on a fumigating machine to disrupt the city. Don't forget where you came from, people. Don't forget what happened. Do not forget. It's extremely important that you understand the sacrifices that have been made. And we need to make sacrifices now. You know, it's a lot of me, 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 I, a lot of selfishness, a lot of self-absorbed people. You know, the narcissism makes me want to puke some days when I see, you know, again, some of the fuckery on Facebook and Twitter is sickening, you know, on several different levels. Again, you know, some things, it is about us. It is about collectivism. It is about working together. It's important that we understand that.
you know, 4,000 people gathered after Alexander Luby's home was bombed. He was an attorney helping the civil rights movement, and they marched the day after that. But again, his name was Alexander Luby, L-O-O-B-Y. L-O-O-B-Y. Do not forget. Look it up. Look it up. Again, I challenge you to look up what I'm talking about and what I'm saying. You know, it's important. You know, going back to the young lady, Diane Nash, her, C.T. Vivian, and Bernard Lafayette. You know, they led the protest in Nashville in 1960. You know, find a backbone and stand up, people. Come on. Find a backbone and stand up. We're going to have to, because every day more and more of our civil liberties are being taken away from us. But again, we have to work together. We have to work together, and again, we have to put together an agenda and have something to present. It does not matter if we have a black president in office. He told us to hold his feet to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to present him an agenda of what we need.
Exactly.
It's where are our leaders? Where are they?
Exactly.
You know, and so, you know, it's just, it's interesting, you know. You know, I definitely, you know, want you guys to go out and look up this information. You know, I spoke about Medgar Evers on the storyboard there. And a lot of people, you know, aren't necessarily familiar with his story, or he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. His wife, Merle, gave the invocation for President Obama's inauguration this past Monday. And basically, Medgar Evers was a civil rights activist from Mississippi, and he was assassinated, you know, in front of his home,
okay,
in front of, basically in front of his children,
mm-hmm,
you know, and he did a lot of work, you know, in the community. He, a very intelligent man, and I definitely want you guys to go out, you know, and, you know, find out what happened and where this came from. You know, they were from Mound Bayou, Mississippi, you know, which is interesting. They have a lot of tobacco farms in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Don't ask me why I know. I know people that live in that area that own these tobacco plantations. But, you know, it's interesting. He wanted to go to law school, but his application was rejected. You know, he gave a lot, you know, and basically, you know, he was shot down in front of his home. He was shot down, you know, he was getting out the car, carrying some packages in, you know, I believe it was some T-shirts, and he was killed. And that was June 12, 1963. Medgar Evers. I would encourage you guys to go and do some research on him. There's a college named after him that took place in 1969. His wife is a speaker. I posted a TED Talk that she had done. And, you know, I just say go and take a look at it. Look and listen with an open mind, you know, to what she has to say. It's interesting. Bob Dylan wrote a song in his honor, and it was called Only a Pawn in Their Game. You know, it's amazing. You know, a lot of people were inspired by him. Just go out and read and find out and understand, you know, that a lot of people lost their lives so that you can buy $200 shoes that you really can't afford. A lot of people gave their lives so that you can say that, you know, you're keeping it real. And what you're doing is, you know, in some cases, just showing your idiocy, mm-hmm, and showing your ignorance. Idiocy and ignorance, you know, two of the places where the playing field is definitely leveled. Mm-hmm. We have to elevate ourselves and raise the standards of excellence, you know. For those who aren't familiar with Emmett Till, Emmett Till basically was a young man from Chicago who went down to Mississippi to visit some relatives, and he was accused of the crime of whistling at a young white girl. He was tortured. He was shot. He was, you know, tied to the fan wheel of a cotton gin. A fan wheel. You know those old-fashioned fans that we used to have that, you know, little kids try to put their fingers in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a fan wheel. You know, you all need to understand and know the torture, you know, that that young man went through. And then they dumped his body. They dumped him in a river. And his mother made them keep his casket open because what happened was they tried to bury him and they filled the casket up with lime, L-I-M-E, which basically would just totally disintegrate the skin. It would just eat everything up, eat him through and through. And they found it in time to have that, you know, basically washed away and get the body cleaned up. And his mother, you know, I don't know who she was advised by or if she just knew these things, you know. Basically, she had his body encased in a coffin and it's, you know, encased in glass. And to this day, his body is, you know, intact. And it was an open casket. And people saw what, you know, this young man, you know, looked like, you know, how horrific his body was. And, you know, it was over 50,000 people that attended his service to see what had happened, you know. And, oh, you know, guys, it's important. It's important that you know who these people are. And another person out of Mound Bayou, Mississippi, Mason Howard. Again, Mason Howard. This guy was a wealthy doctor, and he paid for Emmett Till's mom to come down to Mississippi to get her baby and to go to trial, and so that she could testify, you know. And, you know, he brought her to his home and, you know, treated her well. And, you know, again, his name is Mason Howard. And, you know, basically he declared upon Till's kidnapping that the slaughtering of Negroes, well, not him, but basically the slaughtering of Negroes is allowed to continue. Mississippi will have a civil war. Negroes are only going to take so much. And that was the quote. That's part of a quote for him. And, you know, basically he promised that there would be hell to pay in Mississippi. And he kept his word. And again, his name is Mason Howard. And, you know, he pushed the agenda for, you know, self-help, black business, political equality. And, you know, it's important that, you know, we understand this and we know this. You know, there's so much that has happened in our communities. But, yeah, guys, you know, go out and look this up. You know, he was one of the wealthiest and most successful African Americans in Mississippi. And he founded the Regional Council on Negro Leadership. And this was a civil rights organization, and they organized economic boycotts and hounded state and local officials to meet their legal obligations to fund black and white facilities equally. And that's what we need to do now. We need to go in and demand that things are done, you know, that the playing field is leveled. I mean, it's important. It's important. And again, these people lost their lives, and some of them, you know, risked their businesses, their professions. And it's important that, you know, we know who they are. Modjeska Simkin, Modjeska Simkin, Simkins. And this was a young woman that was, you know, thriving. She was working in public health. She was the director of Negro Work for South Carolina Tuberculosis Association.
and she became the only full-time statewide African-American public health worker. Well, she started working with the civil rights movement and, you know, working with, you know, the NAACP, and she lost her job. She lost her job because she was working with NAACP and working in the civil rights movement. And basically, you know, ironically, and I hate to say this, but NAACP turned their back on her because after she started working, you know, in the civil rights movement, they started accusing her of being a communist. And if you go back and you look at the history, quite a few of the people working in the civil rights movement or participating in the civil rights movement, they were accused of being socialists. They were accused of being communists. And while she, you know, had friends and associates that, you know, were communists, if you will, because she was associated with them, she was also accused of being a communist. And, she, again, you know, she lost, you know, quite a bit. She was accused of being a subversive, you know, by the FBI and the House Un-American Activities Committee. And, you know, her house was shot at, you know. And, you know, I just think it was a slap in the face that the NAACP turned their back on her. It's just, it's interesting. You know, she worked with Joseph DeLane and where she helped write the declaration for the school lawsuit that asked for the equalization of Clarendon County black and white schools. And the Clarendon County case was eventually reworked to become one of the several individual cases set up directly challenging the separate but equal doctrine of the Supreme Court in the case of Brown versus the Board of Education. So it helped to challenge the board, the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court case. You know, I tell you all to go and get familiar with Plessy versus Ferguson as well. You know, I'll talk about that a little bit later, but it's just, it's important. It's very, very important that you know who these people are. And again, Modjeska, M-O-D-J-E-S-K-A, Simkins, S-I-M-K-I-N-S. Find out who these people are. Find out who these people are. It's important that you know. And I'm going to post, you know, a shitload of links a little bit later. But, you know, it's important that you know. George McLaurin, M-C-L-A-U-R-N, George McLaurin. And basically, you know, with this gentleman here, he provided the Oklahoma civil rights case that damaged the 1896 Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal legal position beyond repair. He held a master's degree from the University of Kansas and taught at Langston University. You know, find out who this gentleman is. You know, he, you know, provided, or well, he challenged, you know, quite a few things with these colleges and universities. Basically what happened was the Federal District Court ordered Oklahoma University to admit him, and but he was segregated into separate classrooms, libraries, cafeteria, and restroom areas. The picture, I showed a picture of him. He was sitting at a separate desk, and the white students were at the one desk. You know, if you go up and scroll, you can see that. And so, you know, look this information up. Look it up. Thurgood Marshall argued in McLaurin versus Oklahoma State Regents for Higher Education that this humiliating treatment violated the 14th Amendment. In 1950, the Supreme Court ruled that the universities must provide the same treatment for African-American students as they do for other races. Look it up. Look it up. I want you to look this up. You know, so much information out here. I'm going to see if I can put this one link in the chat room, because I actually think that you would like this particular link. But, you know, it's a lot of things that have been happening, a lot of things that have been going on. You know, you have a lot of people, again, that was part of the civil rights movement, names that you all may not know. You know, you have Marvel Cook, M-A-R-V-E-L, Cook, C-O-O-K-E. You have Dorothy Cotton, C-O-T-T-O-N. You know, so many different names, so many different people. I'm sure quite a few of you all have heard of James Foreman, you know, SNCC official and activist. Betty Friedan, F-R-I-E-D-A-N, sorry, Friedan. And she was a writer, activist, and feminist, you know, for our feminists out there. And you have Lola Hendricks, you know, in a Birmingham campaign. Don't forget these people. Do not forget these people. You have Nellie Stone Johnson, and she was a labor and civil rights activist, and she was a counselor to Hubert Humphrey. So, you know, you have all of these people, a lot of beautiful people that cared, you know, that cared. You have James Orange. Look him up as well. You have Amelia Robinson, you know, voting rights activist. You know, and I'm calling out people that, you know, I don't believe many people have heard of. It's just as important that you all remember, you know, who these folks are. You know, Roy Wilkins, you know, Walter White, you know, Fred Shuttlesworth, who passed away most recently. A lot of people weren't familiar with him. I remember when we posted that information. You know, and go back and, you know, again, you know, you had people like John Brown. Go and look up John Brown regarding, you know, his role being an abolitionist in trying to end slavery. It's important that you all go back and read about a lot of the people who, you know, gave their lives. You have Ruby Bridges. And for those of you who aren't familiar with her, Ruby Bridges, B-R-I-B-G-E-S. And basically, this went down in Tylertown, Mississippi. She was born in Tylertown, Mississippi, and her family moved to New Orleans. And basically, you know, blacks and whites were separate. And basically, she was, you know, one of the first little girls or young ladies to go to an all-white school, you know. And basically, he didn't want her. You know, he didn't want any parts of it. Her dad, I guess he, you know, feared that people would, you know, try to hurt his family. And he didn't want that. And so basically, you know, of course the whites didn't want blacks going to their school because they thought that blacks, you know, were inferior, if you will. Mm-hmm. And her mom got her to that school. And the young lady, you know, was escorted by U.S. Marshals. You know, not only her, but several people, but in this case, she was escorted by U.S. Marshals to and from school to protect her from, you know, angry white mobs. And, you know, again, it was a lot of pressure for that little girl. Do you all remember seeing a photo of a little girl, a little black girl in a white dress? And she had troops, you know, a couple of soldiers in front of her and one behind her. That's the young, that's her. I'm going to post this a little bit later, so because if you see the painting, you'll know, you'll remember the painting, but it's her. And that was her image. And, you know, we have these, you know, images, you know, these paintings and lithographs, and people don't know the story behind it. But because of the pressure behind that, the young lady, you know, the baby, had to go see a child psychiatrist. And it was just, it was a lot of pressure, you know, it was a lot of pressure. So it was just interesting. I just say, you know your history. Know your history. Go out here and get this information. It's a lot that's happened. You know, I think we're going to do a show a little bit later
talking about ethnic riots or black riots, what's happened in this country. I think I'm going to take it all the way back and, you know, talk about what's happened and why some of these transpired. And, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, just a lot of stuff. You know, we're going to talk about the riots in Los Angeles with Rodney King. We can take it all the way back to the Battle of Hayes Pond, if you will. The Harlem Riot of 1964, the Rochester Riot. I think that's what Ralph was talking about. We're going to talk about all of those things. We're going to talk about the May 11th race riot down in Augusta, Georgia, the Jackson State killing, you know, at Jackson State University. I want to talk about all of that. It might be next week. You know, I haven't decided if I want to do two heavy topics like this back-to-back. But it's a lot of that's happened, a lot that has happened. And, you know, when I do that show, I'm going to show how, you know, angry white mobs in the majority of these cases attacked blacks. So, you know, we're going to be talking about Rosewood. We're going to talk about Tulsa. We're going to talk about all of that. And then I'm going to tie it into today with the Second Amendment militia people out here. It's just important for us to understand and to see how all of this connects and how it all correlates. I've posted a lot of links on my page the past couple of days, but I'm going to post quite a few more. You know, just going down some more. Again, you know, you have the New York Slave Revolt of 1712. You know, again, look it up, New York Slave Revolt of 1712, you know, that was part of the civil rights movement as well. You know, I consider it as part of the civil rights movement because, you know, those people rose up. And, you know, basically it was 23 slaves that rose up and they killed 9 whites and injured, you know, 6 more. And, you know, they were tired of being mistreated. And, you know, quite a few were arrested and jailed, put on trial. 21 were convicted and executed. And, you know, there were quite a few rebellions. For those of you who thought that the slaves were complacent and just acquiesced to the status quo, go back and read your history. You're going to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, go back and read your history. Understand what has been happening. You know, they're not teaching you this in school. Mm-hmm. At least I wasn't. And for, you know, Black History Month, whether you celebrated it February or June, they're not teaching you these. They show the same people over and over. And I don't really necessarily believe in Black History Month. I believe every day we should talk about these things and these histories so that we will not forget. A lot of people know who Crispus Attucks was, first person to die in the American Revolution. I won't even get into the politics and debate behind that. But, you know, it's just, it's important. The Vermont Republic, which was a sovereign nation at the time, they abolished slavery July 8, 1777. And they were the first future state to do so. Pennsylvania was the first U.S. state to abolish slavery. You know, it's important that you all know about these things. You know, following the American Revolution, a number of slaveholders, they freed their slaves. And basically, you know, that was between 1790 and 1810. They just freed them and let them go. And by 1810, 75% of all blacks in Delaware were free. And 7.2% of blacks in Virginia were free. So, you know, go back and, you know, study this and understand, you know, what happened
you know, and how all of this came back, understand about the black codes, you know, and that was like in the early 1800s. And basically what the black codes were, they were laws in this country that were enacted after the Civil War, basically to stifle, you know, civil rights and the civil liberties of blacks. You know, learn what these black codes are. Learn what these black laws were. Jim Crow, you know, guys, go back and read it. You know, it's only so much that I can, you know, tell you. Only so much that I can put out here right now, you know. It's a lot more, and that's why I think I'm going to turn this into a series. Because you need to understand what happened. You know, blacks were considered three-fifths of a human being. They were considered chattel. C-H-A-T-T-E-L, you know, which means they were property. And, you know, if I wanted to tie that into religion, I could, because there are a lot of men under the misconception that their women or their wives and their children are their chattel.
Thank you.
And so you need to understand that, you know, you know, go in and do some reading on this. You know, Article 13 of Indiana's 1851 Constitution stated, "No Negro or mulatto shall come into or settle in the state after adoption of this Constitution." That was in Indiana. You know, the 1848 Constitution of Illinois led to one of the harshest black code systems in the nation until the Civil War. The Illinois Black Code of 1853 extended a complete prohibition against black immigration into the state. Know your history.
Mm-hmm.
Know your history. It's important that you guys go back and understand what happened, the sacrifices that were made. And this is why we need to come together, put forth an agenda, and demand some changes. You know, the black codes granted African Americans certain rights, such as legalized marriage, ownership of property, and limited access to the courts, but it denied them the rights to testify against whites, to serve on juries or in state militias, or to vote and express legal concern publicly. Okay, now that's interesting right there. It would not allow them to express legal concern publicly, which is why a lot of the civil rights leaders had to meet in these churches. And I want you all to understand and to know the civil rights movement was rooted in a church, but it was not rooted in religion. There is a difference between the two, and you need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand, you know, the difference between that. You know, they had to meet at the churches. They didn't really have a choice. Meeting publicly would bring about, you know, concern and possibly, you know, jail. So they had to meet at the church. These were the only places that they could meet. And then even that, after a while, aroused suspicion, which is why you had the church bombing. So look that up as well. Church bombings, you know, during the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
The lot that they don't report and that they don't tell you about. You know, and again, in Mississippi, with their black code, you know, basically, you know, it states here, Negroes must make annual contracts for their labor in writing. If they should run away from their task, they forfeited their wages for the year. Whenever it was required of them, they must seek or they must present licenses in a town from the mayor, swear from a member of the board of police of the beat, citing their places of residence and authorizing them to work. Fugitives from labor were to be arrested, carried back to their employers. $5 a head and mileage would be allowed such Negro catchers. That's where the indigenous people came in, and the militia. And so, you know, understand, you know, in South Carolina, you know, it says here, in South Carolina, persons of color contracting for services were to be known as servants, and those with whom they contracted as masters. I'll read that again.
in South Carolina, persons of color contracting for service were to be known as servants, and those with whom they contracted as masters. On farms, the hours of labor would be from sunrise to sunset daily, except on Sunday. You see why people started going to church? It was the only place where they had an outlet, because even on Sundays, and I'm not sure, and I'm going to have to research this, but I'm sure if they were sitting around on Sundays, somebody found something for them to do. Or they were placed in precarious positions, you know, like being raped or beat. Sunday may have been their only outlet, which kind of goes into how some of these traditions and rituals came about. We need to understand how some of this came about, how some of the mindset has come about. Because I truly believe that deep down, you know, there's a fear that if some of us gave up religion and gave up the church, that we would be put back into indentured servitude. I really do believe that fear has been passed down. But that's just
me. I think that really in the back of some people's minds that they really actually believe that we were sinful. That's why we were put in slavery.
Did that, yeah, honey, I'm sorry.
Huh?
Can you repeat that, dear? Thank you.
I think back in some people's minds back in that day, and probably today too, that they really thought that we were a sinful people, and that's why we were put into slavery. I think they accepted some accepted slavery because of that, you know? I really do.
Yeah, it's wow. It's
you
just
have to think about where their mind, you know, some people. I remember talking to my mama, right? My mama passed away last year, and she was 91, so you can imagine. And I was talking to her a few years back. I said, "Mom, you know, why you?" And she said, "Why you on there?" I said, "Well, you know, we're from Africa. I ain't from no Africa." You know, that was the attitude. You know, I understand, you know, because, back in my mom's time, you didn't know what was going on in the next community. You had to go by what people told you, and you know who was telling them. And, I can understand, but I'm saying this is what they believe.
Right, and that's the reason why I think it's important, you know, that we understand the mindset of some of these people and what has been passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, we need to get a better understanding of the history to understand where some of these people are coming from. Even with some of the believers today, someone put in the chat room, you know, imagine living under that kind of stress. You know, again, you know, I believe a lot of that is tied into some of the health conditions that we have, you know, in particular, you know, high blood pressure.
Of course.
You know, and many of us are still living under an incredible amount of stress. But, you know, again, like I said, you know, talk to these people. Write down their history. Write down their stories. Videotape it. I mean, you can do it on your phone now and upload it. Put it on YouTube. You know, it's important that we not forget where we came from. It's important that we understand what these people sacrificed and what some of us continue to sacrifice, you know, because institutional racism is alive and well.
Yeah.
It is alive and well. And I'm going to go on with the black codes, basically. You know, it outraged public opinion in the North, and because it seemed like the South was creating some form of quasi-slavery to negate the results of the war. And just look at what's happening, you know. And again, you know, it's interesting. I want you guys to look up slavery in Native Americans. Look up slavery in whites.
It will be interesting. You will be educated. You will be educated. Look up slavery, breeding, African Americans, and Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up. You will be amazed. You know, just a lot of reading. A lot of reading I've been doing. And, you know, there have been many times I've been reading and stuff, and it just put me in tears. Just put me in tears. I remember, you know, my mom and, you know, other people trying to talk to me about, you know, some of this when I was younger, and I didn't want to hear about it. It was like I had the attitude that was then and this is now. And, you know, I regret that. But when you're young, you don't know. And that's the reason why I say we have to have patience with some of these young people. But all I have to say to some of the young people who believe that that was then and this is now, baby, live a little bit. Live
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah. Your they're still looking at...
Go ahead.
They're still looking at white sheets to represent white supremacy. But see, different strokes for different folks. And they have been using different ways to do that same thing. Excuse me.
Yeah, it's just, you know, live a little bit, and, you know, I hate to use cliches, but this is a very real one, but experience is a teacher. Experience definitely is a teacher. But, yeah, you know, and again, you know, just to make sure you all understand, there's a difference between the Black Codes and the Jim Crow laws. And, you know, with the Jim Crow laws, basically, those were state and local laws that were enacted between 1876 and 1965. You know how they tease the Mexicans now or, you know, the immigrants now about show me your papers. It was the same way for blacks. With the Jim Crow laws. Look it up. Look it up. They had to show their papers. You know, it's sobering, if you will. It's sobering. But there are some people who live in these bubbles, and we need to pop them. Pop those bubbles and come and live in reality with the rest of us because, you know, this was very, very real. I mean, go back and study Reconstruction, you know, and this was between 1865 and 1877. And ironically, you know, we just had a black senator basically replace someone else, but, you know, in our U.S. legislature. And he was the first, you know, since, you know, Reconstruction, you know, Barack Obama, you know, first from Illinois. Go back and read it. Understand it, you know, I have some ideas. We're gonna do some things. This year, you know, you're gonna see a lot more from Black Freethinkers Media. You know, I'm feeling a lot better than I did last year. My health is coming back, and I have some phenomenal and fantastic ideas. I have other people that I've been collaborating with. We have some wonderful ideas. We're going to bring you all a lot more this year. You know, we're going to bring it. And I'm just, you know, we're going to do a lot. We're going to do a lot this year. I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to put this information out there because you guys, you need to know it. You need to understand, you know, what's happening. You know, in California, which, you know, a lot of people consider, you know, California very progressive, but there was a civil rights bill. I'm looking it up now so I can make sure you all that I have the details so I can give it to you. But in California, a Civil Rights Act of 1991, and basically it prohibited discrimination in employment based on race, gender, color, religious, or ethnic consideration. And this happened in California. You know, there were a lot of things happening out there, and basically said there were a lot of factors leading to the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1991 that were controversial and complex as the law itself. Prior to 1964, the only major civil rights legislation to emanate from Congress was the Post-Civil War Civil Rights Act of 1866, Title 42 of the United States Code, Section 1981, which was often quoted and cited in debates surrounding the 1991 Act. The 1866 Act applied only to black employees, giving them the right to sue their employers for punitive and compensatory damages in cases of employment discrimination. In addition, the law permitted jury trials in such cases. In different forms, the same issues and remedies were addressed by the 1991 Civil Rights Act. So, you know, they've passed civil rights acts as recently as 1991. You know, this is important that you all know about this. January 8th, 1964, you know, we were supposed to have a war on poverty. And President Johnson, you know, he called for a war on poverty. And I quote, "Unfortunately, many Americans live on the outskirts of hope, some because of their poverty and some because of their color, and all too many because of both. Our task is to help replace their despair with opportunity." And, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, was working on, you know, poverty before he passed away. He wanted to address it with the Poor People's Campaign. And that particular campaign, it was going to include everyone, not just blacks, but it would include the indigenous, it would include poor whites. You know, we had, you know, Latino, you know, mestizo, you know, citizens then as well. And, you know, he was killed before they had a chance to kick off this campaign. This actually needs to be picked back up. It needs to be picked back up. It's just, it's interesting, you know, and what's, you know, even more sobering about this is that a lot of people don't know about this information. And some people just don't freaking care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's sad.
Yeah.
You know, Ralph was talking about the Harlem riot that took place July 18th, 1964. And, you know, there was a fatal shooting of a 15-year-old, you know, black boy by a white police officer. And, you know, they rioted. You know, one person was killed, 100 were injured, and several hundred were arrested. You know, you had the Rochester riot, July 24th, 1964. You know, the police arrested a 19-year-old black man for public drunkenness at a block party in Rochester, New York. Rumors of a more vicious police attack sparked a violent riot involving several thousand people. Of nearly 1,000 people arrested, most are black, between the ages of 20 and 40 years of age, employed and with no prior police record. You know, it's a bunch of things. You know, it's, you know, we have to understand what's happening and what has happened in our past and be able to take, you know, these examples and what happened and be able to move forward. We need to be able to put forth an agenda because, you know, the economic gaps, you know, it's staggering. You know, basically there is no middle class anymore. The middle class has been crushed and, you know, basically they were expendable. And we're going to have to address that and a bunch of other issues. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, being distracted. I mean, who cares if, you know, someone lip-syncs? Who cares about somebody's dress or bank? I don't care. That means nothing to me. Go ahead.
What rapper is dating who and who's pregnant with who and, oh, somebody else has a sex tape out? Like, that's not even interesting anymore. Like, it became normal somehow. I don't know. People, like, this is where your attention is going? Are you really that comfortable? And sometimes I look at people and it's like, you can't be that comfortable to where your attention can go into these silly things. That lip-syncing story, I can't believe that's a story. I turn my TV off so much now.
Right, exactly. And it's
been
a while.
Sweet. They want everything sweet now.
Yeah, we have to be careful with that free thing. But, you know, again, you know, we have to address, you know, patriarchy. We have to address, you know, privilege. Not only white privilege, but, you know, there are some black male privileges as well.
Yeah.
So, and, yeah, it has to be addressed. And so, you know, it's, the whole thing is just, you know, interesting. And, you know, I want people to know and understand what's happening. You know, we'll talk a lot more about these things in the future. You know, February 21st, 1965, Malcolm X was assassinated. You know, March 7th, 1965, you know, that was called Bloody Sunday. And over 600 people leave Selma, Alabama for Montgomery in a march for voting rights. You know, the participants reached the Pettus Bridge, where state and local troopers used knife sticks and tear gas to drive them back to Selma. You know, they don't feature all of that. Go ahead, hon.
Oh, you know, the black male privilege, like, that is, and it's a funny thing. I don't know, like, what I call it, a thin line or a thick line, like, between being stereotyped to be an idiot. And then, like, as soon as I just say, like, a three-syllable word, oh, people jump up. They're like, oh my God, he's a genius. He's brilliant, this guy. You know, like, all I did was just say something that somebody smart said. Like, I'm not a genius. I read the stuff that geniuses write, and then I just repeat it to you. And, you know, suddenly it's so awesome because a black guy said it. Or, like, in the 90s, like, we were automatically seen as tough guys. Nobody wanted to mess with the black guy. But then, you know, all that MMA stuff happened. You lost that. Those jiu-jitsu guys are way tougher than you are in the hood.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You know, we should petition for the president to have a commission. To have a commission to look at, you know, the disparities and sentencing, you know, Afro-black people to jail, you know, comparatively to, you know, whites and Latinos. We need a commission about that. We need a commission about this so-called war on drugs. We need a commission about quite a few things, and that should be on our agenda. You know, it's extremely important. Daniel Moynihan, you know, in June 1964, he was the Secretary of Labor, and he released a controversial report on the total breakdown of black society. And he finds that the root of the problems basically faced by black family, it was, you know, basically embedded in the legacy of slavery, growing urbanization, racial discrimination in employment and education, and a tradition of matriarchy. You know, so It's interesting. You know, don't forget the Watts riot in 1965 in L.A. It was a six-day riot, and 34 people died, 1,100 were injured, and 4,000 were arrested. You know, a lot of people didn't know Martin Luther King moved his family to Chicago. And it's interesting because after he got here, he called Chicago one of the most segregated cities, or the most segregated city in the United States. And it is. If you all ever come to Chicago, you'll see we have different areas. You know, you have where the Polish people live, where the Irish people live, where the, you know, Asian people live, and Latino pockets and black pockets. And it's just, it's interesting. You know, Chicago is extremely, extremely segregated. It's just, it's interesting. Yeah, it's very. Go ahead, honey.
I was just saying, I believe that, you know, from what I've, I got interested in Chicago because a lot of, a few years back, because a lot of people who I was talking to online was from Chicago and Michigan too is weird, but yeah, it's what I see. Yeah, you know, I would. It's so shocking to me because I always thought up north was different.
Right.
I just thought that y'all were completely over all this mess. I really did. You know, but I found out a lot of people up there, they don't know a lot of stuff that went on, or even it's like history. They don't know a lot of stuff. Weird.
Right. See, and that's the thing, and that's the reason why I don't fault them for not knowing. You know,
no.
I used to point the finger at people for not knowing. I point the finger at you for not knowing after I've given you the information.
Mm.
And then to me, you're willfully ignorant. If you don't know, you can't blame somebody for not knowing something. But if the information is presented to you and you remain willfully ignorant, because there are some people that are indignant. They don't want to know about some of these things. Then, you know, again, that's a different scenario. It's interesting, you know, because when Martin Luther King was here in Chicago, you know, they marched through some of these white neighborhoods. In particular, you have Cicero and Bridgeport and, you know, other areas like that. And they were throwing bricks and basically, you know, kind of whipped their asses. And they were saying, white power. And the young man, it's a comedian, that's on a radio with one of these hosts, and he attempted to buy a house in Bridgeport here in Chicago. This was in the past within the past 10 years because the court case just finished up, and basically they wouldn't sell him a house. Now, this was a multi-million dollar house, and he had the money to pay for it, and they would not sell it to him. You know, so, you know, Bridgeport has opened up because for Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, we had some meetings over in Bridgeport because one of our members had an art studio over there. And, you know, she was gracious enough to open up her, you know, studio to us. And it was in Bridgeport. And so, you know, they're making some strides, but, you know, there are certain parts of Chicago, it would not be to your benefit to be there after sundown. You know, there was, you know, a young man who was riding his bicycle through there by mistake, and they beat him, you know. So, and this is when I was a preteen, you know. But, again, discrimination, institutionalized discrimination and racism, you know, that is not a figment of the past. You know, we still deal with quite a bit of that now. And I just think it's important for, you know, people to understand, you know, what's happening. We'll give you a couple of court cases here. Loving versus Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Again, Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah.
This took place June 12th, 1967. Again, June 12, 1967, and this is when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that state laws prohibiting interracial marriage are unconstitutional, and the ruling affected 16 states that banned the practice. So again, Loving versus Virginia, interracial marriage. You know, June 13, 1967, you know, Thurgood Marshall was appointed to the Supreme Court. A lot of things that have happened. Detroit riots, you know, police raid an illegal drinking establishment, and 43 people were killed, close to 1,200 were injured, and more than 7,000 people arrested. That was June 23rd, 1967, in Detroit. You know, Carl Stokes of Cleveland, Ohio, and Richard Hatcher in Gary, Indiana, became the first black mayors elected in major U.S. cities. That was November 7th, 1967. You know, so it's just interesting. Go out, learn your history, and you know, empower yourself. Knowledge is power. Empower yourself. Because I've seen situations in which, you know, I would see, you know, a black person having a conversation or a dispute with, you know, someone not of color, and I would see the black person get very frustrated because they couldn't always counter the information that was being offered by, you know, the person of, you know, non-color. And find out this information, read it, so that you'll be able to, you know, combat, you know, a lot of that ignorance. It's just, it's amazing. Of course, April 4th, 1968, that's the day Martin Luther King was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel down in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, it's interesting about James Earl Ray and the controversy behind that, but after, you know, the murder of Martin Luther King, you know, riots broke out all over this country. You know, Chicago, D.C., Baltimore, and Kansas. You know, Bobby Hutton was killed April 6th, the next day in Oakland. You know, and for those of you who aren't familiar with that, Bobby Hutton was a member of the Black Panther Party, and he was only 17 years old, and he was the first, you know, recruit for the Black Panther Party. You know, Abernathy, you know, Ralph Abernathy led the Poor People's March on May 12th, 1968, you know, because this was planned before Martin Luther King was assassinated, and they built a resurrection city, which was a plywood shantytown near the Washington Monument, you know, so... You know, it's just as important for you guys to go back and understand that Shirley Chisholm was first African-American woman to be elected to the House of Representatives. That happened November 5th, 1968. She was unbought and unbossed. That's what I'm talking about, Shirley Chisholm.
Barbara Jordan?
Yes.
When did she get in there, Barbara Jordan? I used to like her.
Say that again.
Barbara Jordan. You remember Barbara Jordan?
Yeah, Barbara Jordan from Texas.
Yeah,
Barbara Jordan.
When did she? When was she in there?
Barbara Jordan was. Let's see here. Let's look her information up. You know. Yeah, but she was from Texas, and she was the first in a lot of different scenarios there, but. She was, you know, also part of the civil rights movement. Yeah, we got to acknowledge Barbara Jordan as well.
Yeah.
She was the first African-American elected to the Texas Senate after Reconstruction and the first Southern black female elected to the U.S. House of Rep. And she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, amongst a bunch of other honors. And she became the first African-American woman to be buried in the Texas State Cemetery.
Yes.
And, you know, she taught at Tuskegee. Beautiful woman.
Yes,
beautiful
woman.
She had
another one. She was rough.
Yeah, you know, and she suffered from MS and leukemia.
Yeah.
And she left her estate to her partner of 30 years, Nancy Earl.
Mm-hmm.
So Barbara Jordan was a member of the LGBT community. And, you know, beautiful woman, beautiful legacy, you know, so it's important that, you know, we know and understand, you know, what happened and who these people are. And I really didn't mean to lecture the whole 2 hours today. You know, that definitely was not my intention, but it kind of just happened that way. But, you know, I hope you guys learned something from, you know, learn something from this show today. And it's so much more. It's so much more that, you know, we could talk about, you know, October 29th, 1969, in Alexander versus Holmes County Board of Education, the Supreme Court ruled
unanimously to order immediate desegregation of 33 Mississippi school districts. The court's previous plan to administer these changes with all deliberate speed, they agree, is no longer acceptable. And, school bus April 20th, 1971, in Swan versus Charlotte Mecklenburg Board of Education, the Supreme Court rules in favor of busing students as a way to achieve the integration of public schools. Mm-hmm. And, it's just interesting. In November 1972, that's when the Tuskegee experiments were discovered and publicized. And basically using human beings as laboratory animals in a long and inefficient study of how long it takes syphilis to kill someone. Mm-hmm. And that went on after 40 years. It's interesting.
And AIDS is in that, when they went over there to Africa, that's how AIDS got started. They wanted to say it came from a monkey. It didn't come from no monkey.
Well, that right there, that's subject to debate as far as, HIV and AIDS and the different theories as to, where that came from and how that came about. But again, that's subject to debate. And we're going to do another HIV and AIDS show. So you're not definitely welcome you to call in and we can talk about that then. Because, you have different theories, but anyway, I don't really want to get into that. We'll talk about that, we have, that particular show. It's just interesting. Talk about Kathleen Cleaver, basically she was secretary for the New York branch of the SNCC. And, she left the organization in 1967 after meeting Eldridge Cleaver, and she joined the Black Panther Party, I would encourage you guys to look up Civil Rights Movement, Black Feminism. You will learn a lot.
Yeah.
You will learn a lot from that as well. I know some people say, do you just sit on Google and read all day? For the most part.
It's no excuse not to.
Right.
If you don't know, check it out.
Right, exactly. And this is how you learn. I post, quite a bit, but I only post 10-15% of what I read. It's a lot of information out there. Another little tidbit that people may not know about is basically, during the Civil Rights Movement, there were some conflicts between some of the believers, some of the civil rights activists and leaders. And John Lewis, he wanted to deliver, this speech about the progress of the movement, and bring it to the people during, so that people can have an understanding of what was happening. And, he was heading the SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And he was concerned about the absence at the march of the most impoverished, black men and women, especially sharecroppers, tenant farmers, and domestic workers. And he said, in good consciousness, we cannot support the administration's civil rights bill, for it is too little, too late. And basically, some of the, powerful, leaders or participants in the civil rights movement, they censored quite a bit of his original speech. It was, quite a few people that were considered radical. James Baldwin, was considered too radical, and he was cut from the lineup altogether. And I'm telling you guys, James Baldwin wrote this book called The Fire Next Time. Again, the name of that book is called The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. That book had an incredible impact on me. It is a phenomenal book. It's right here on my headboard now. I think I'm going to read it again this week. That's how much I enjoyed this book. The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. Read that. you'll get something out of it. Trust me, you will. And again, you know, because of the conflicts behind the scenes, you know, there were quite a few, you know, activists, you know, that were frustrated and, you know, and afraid that, you know, that, you know, blacks would lose control of their struggle, of our struggle. You know, some of the same concerns are here now. Not only with civil rights for African Americans, you know, I see some of the same struggles in, you know, with black free thought in the direction that, you know, some of us kind of want this to go. And, you know, to me it's imperative that we know and understand these things and have a good grasp of what we're doing and working together, because you have some Christians out there that call themselves free thinkers, and then you have, you know, Christian humanists, and then you have, you know, Christian atheists or atheist Christians, if you will. And there's wiggle room there for convolution. But, you know, it's just interesting. But a lot of the progress that this country has made started out as secular movements. And somehow it gets hijacked, if you will, by religious people. And I just think it's imperative that we not allow that to happen. That we not allow it to happen. You know, and not allow, you know, other people to come and take over. You know, you know, I have an example that I just dealt with here in Chicago. But, you know, I'm going to save that. I'm going to save that for another day. Well, let's just say, you know, it pissed me off. But, you know, that's another story. Yes. You know. Go ahead, baby.
Oh, on the way out, could I speak to that, what was brought up a little earlier with the racism in the North, how it can be a little surprising there?
Yes, dear, please.
Yeah, I remember back in 1988, this was half a decade before my biological mother expired, and we moved out. We're in Washington State, and, I mean, we all know what Washington State is now, you know, gay marriage,
right.
Legal reefer, you know, highest minimum wage on the continent, $9.16 an hour. But in 1988, we moved out to a town called Spanaway in a neighborhood called Sunnydale out there. And I know a lot of people don't know, like on the West Coast, like around that time, that was the skinhead jump off, the little neo-Nazi guys running around. I used to get chased home by skinheads, you know, and, you know, get jumped sometimes by little sons and nephews of skinheads. But, in late 1988 and, like, going into early 1989, they were doing this thing where they were throwing open beer cans. Like, they wouldn't drink it. They would open a beer can and, you know, throw it at you. So you get clunked in the head with a can full of beer and you get beer spilled on you. You know, they scream nigger and drive off. And I was going
right.
into 1990, I think the grossest thing they did to me, a guy pulled up slow on his truck and spit chewing tobacco in my face and did the classic yell nigger and drive off. But what was great, ironically, you know, it's like a bad thing, but a good thing, the gangs from California started coming up there, and the Mexican gangs, El Loco Posse in particular, the crazy posse, they started smashing those guys out. Even though they brought a little bit of drug business into the good neighborhood, they got rid of those violent racists, and the neighborhood really got a lot better. But, yeah, racism in the North, I know that well, and personal, the physical attacks as a child.
Exactly. The first time I was just outright, well, no, we'll just say one of the most surprising first times I was called the N-word outright. I was on Georgia Tech's campus. I was down there in Atlanta on Georgia Tech campus, and someone drove by, and they were like, nigger, and I'm, you know, and I just looked around. I'm like, what's really going on here? You know, I've been in several situations. You know, I was, you know, one of the brighter kids in school. And it was interesting because it was in calculus. I think it was one of my calculus classes. And this was high school. And one of the white guys, he got frustrated because he couldn't understand it. And I was the only black in his class, mind you. And he got frustrated. And he was like, even she understands it.
you know, and I was like, wow. You know, that was interesting. And then another interesting was in my AP physics, I was in advanced placement physics, and, you know, the teacher was a hippie. You can tell he was, you know, leftover hippie, if you will. They were doing this experiment and had everything to do with, like, friction and motion and all of that. And basically, you know, he said, well, who can tell me, you know, how this works? And he went around the entire classroom and no one got it. And I raised my hand and I was correct. And he just sat there. You would have thought that he was a deer caught in headlights. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting because, you know, there are a lot of smart children in our community. They just don't have the resources and the opportunities. And I believe this is where the free thought community can come in. We can come in and if we can get the resources, you know, and challenge these larger organizations to, you know, match funds or to give us funds or give us seed money to get some of these programs off the ground, we can help a lot of people. We can, you know, create jobs in the community. There's a way to do it. You know, we need grant writers. We need, you know, again, the seed money. We need, you know, establishments. You know, we need, you know, I need a building. You know, actually, I want a, you know, a small warehouse that's been divided up, you know, for some of what I want to do. But, I mean, I'll take a small building for right now. We'll start with what we get. But I just think it's imperative that we know and that we understand that we cannot allow the victims to become the villains. And that's what's been happening in this country. And, you know, they flipped the narrative. And now the victims have now become the villains. We have to stop it. That's why I say we have to go back in and reclaim our history and go back in and set the record straight. Because, you know, there are a lot of goods, you know, they vilified and demonized the Black Panther Party, but that's where the school breakfast program came in. They had medical triage centers that were mobile, and they would give people legal advice and all of that. Kind of the same thing was happening with Occupation Wall Street. Go and look up the Black Panther Party and the great deeds that came out of there and compare it to Occupation Wall Street. Do just a comparative analysis there. You'll be amazed at what you see. You would be amazed, but again, I want to stress that we do not allow the victims to become the villain. And, you know, I see that happening quite a bit. No. We cannot allow that to happen. And so, all right, everybody, again, this is Black Freethinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself. The Barbershop has a show coming up this Tuesday, and it should be a lot of fun. It's Blame, Shame, Duck and Move. And we're going to talk about the Dunning-Kruger effect. We're going to talk about ad hominem attacks. We're going to talk about, Dunning-Kruger, ad hominem, and no true Scotsman. And how believers attack non-believers, non-believers attack believers, believers attack believers, non-believers attack non-believers. So it's interesting. It should be an exciting show. Father Teresa and Dragnut will be there, you know, doing their things. It should be a very, very good show. Mario's doing a show Friday. It's part two from last week. And Raina is doing a show Saturday. Next Sunday, I'm still trying to decide exactly what I'm going to talk about, but it will be fun. Yeah, Alfred, Dragnut, yeah. But anyway, guys, we're going to play something new to kind of let you guys go, but have a beautiful weekend. I love each and every last one of you guys. Thank you for being a part of the show. Peace and love.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thought, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, bring it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop, so Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family in all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black precinct, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. We don't walk by faith in a lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe.